I am back, everyone, with my sprint in amazing cookbook launches. Today I have the incredible food journalist and YouTube personality, Priya Krishna. You have likely read a story or two from her work in the New York Times, seen her on Selena and Chef for an episode, or tried out some of her recipes from her previous cookbook, Indianish. Now Priya has come out with a fun and colorful cookbook for kids named Priya's Kitchen Adventures, which focuses on kid-friendly recipes from cuisines around the world. I also added it to my Amazon storefront so you can order one of your own. We talked everything from food trends to minimum wage in the restaurant world, so please join me in welcoming my conversation with the wonderful Priya Krishna.
I love your gallery wall, by the way. I have been dying to do one.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I love it too. It's got like a lot of my favorite things, and there's like a poster shop in Delhi that I love, and every time I go, I get like a new Bollywood poster or old vintage ad. I love a gallery wall.
Yeah, me too. I've been wanting to do one on the side of my wall here, and it's just been blank since I moved. I honestly just haven't gotten to it. But
they're very hard to conceptualize and like to figure out, like, just like how they go together. Like, it took forever to figure out how to arrange everything in a way that felt organic.
Oh yeah, fair. Well, I have another friend who does all different frames, and my OCD like could never, but I also think it looks really cool, so I don't know.
Yeah, it does. I have a friend who has like all sorts of weird frames, and I think it looks really great.
It does. Well, thank you so much for coming on. And you know, I've been following your career path for a while, especially me being a food journalist and stuff, so it's awesome to meet you, and I appreciate you taking the time out. And you're busy, and now you're sick scheduled.
I think like this is my body being like, you gotta take some time for yourself, Priya.
Oh, I've been there. I'm just like in bed for 3 days. My body's like, why don't you just stop for a second? I think too, were you moderating the New York Times Food Festival a few years ago?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Cause I went there and I remember you speaking, but I couldn't remember if it was Julia Moskin that was. Were you moderating Padma's or no?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so that was Julia then. But I remember seeing you like speak, and you had your cookbook Indianish at the time.
Yep.
Which was very, very cool. And you're so awesome. So I've been wanting to have you on for a while. So very excited about it.
Nice.
Okay, as far as your background goes, I would love to get into your food background, and your mom worked in air travel. So I would love to start with your experience traveling as a kid, which, you know, relates to your new cookbook, but also sounds just like a crazy eye-opening experience. So what was it like?
Yeah, so my mom was, she was a software engineer first, and then she was a programmer, and then she managed programmers for the airline industry. And when you work in airlines, you basically get to stand by for free. And if there's room on the flight, you get on. And so as her family, we had those privileges. And so we would literally just like show up at the airport and see what flight we could get on and just like hop on the first flight that was available to a destination that interested us. And it meant that we got really good at travel really young. Like, I know all the airport codes. I know the airport layouts. I can get through a TSA security line in like 2 minutes. It also meant that like our schedules were very unpredictable. Like, we didn't always know where we were going to go or whether we were going to make it on a flight.
That's exciting though. I feel like as a kid, you're like, the world is so like your oyster. And then when you literally have it at your fingertips, because you are able to go kind of wherever, it's like a crazy and unique experience.
It totally was. Although now that when I talk to my friends who are now parents, they're like, this sounds like a nightmare. Like, not having a guaranteed seat for your kid and just having to like entertain them in an airport all day. Like, that sounds miserable.
Okay. That's fair. When I do see kids out when I'm traveling, I'm like, I can never. So I give props to your mom for bringing you guys along.
She raised really obedient travelers. We were We knew what was up in an airport.
I honestly envy that. I had to learn, you know, kind of when I was older about TSA PreCheck, which is a lifesaver. If anyone's listening, you need to get TSA PreCheck.
You need
it. Makes your life 10 times easier when you travel and faster. But yeah, I kind of envy that. I mean, I've traveled solo a lot just through my career being food and travel, which I'm lucky to do for sure. But the people that are experiencing it as adult for a first time, it's kind of scary to like make your way through, and especially in a different country, and look at different maps and whatever. If you don't have service, it's like, I love that part of it. I think it's really fun.
Agreed.
Being so many places and now being in the food business, what's one of your earliest or most standout memories from traveling as a young person?
Probably when we went to Cairo, Egypt, and
I ate
hummus for the first time. Like, I always tell people, I'm like, I grew up in like a pre-Sabra age. Like, hummus wasn't like the after school snack. Like, I didn't know what it was. And so I went to Egypt when I was like 8 or 9 years old, and I had like the real deal hummus with the pool of olive oil and the dusting of chili powder and the fresh pita that they served alongside. And it just, like, good hummus is like mind blowing. It's like fatty and rich and creamy and silky and smooth. And just like, I don't know, when you're a kid, it just, it's so, you just want to like swim in a bowl of hummus. And going to Egypt and trying hummus for the first time was such a, like, it remains such a core memory for me.
Now that you said that, I don't even think I've ever really, I mean, I've gone out to restaurants with kind of homemade hummus, I guess, but in my actual home, I've never made or had like homemade hummus, which is crazy.
That is crazy. You gotta go try that. The homemade stuff is it's like worlds different. In fact, well, you got to try the recipe in my book, which is by Egyptian Bolivian chef, Ham El Wiley. And he totally crushed this recipe because I was like, I need you to develop a recipe for hummus that's creamy, but it has to use canned chickpeas. Like, don't want kids to like make chickpeas from scratch. And he delivered like what I think is like my new standard for hummus recipes.
That's so interesting. I was actually obsessed with chocolate hummus, which is definitely so processed. probably definitely not as good as like the homemade chickpea ones. But yeah, you must have had to make all of your recipes really exclusive to kids. Was that difficult for you to kind of translate your own adult cooking skills to make it kid friendly?
Not at first. I thought like, oh, I'm gonna have to change a lot of these recipes. And then as the recipes came in and I started doing what I felt was like making them kid friendly, I realized, especially with talking to kids, because I had 30 kid recipe testers, that kids don't want recipes that feel like dumbed down or whitewashed. They want recipes with instructions that are really clear, that empower them to like make their own decisions. Like, they love a choose your own adventure recipe where it's like, if you like it spicy, add this, if not, skip it or add something else. They love recipes where they can build or create something, where they can fold a dumpling, they can shape rice into onigiri, they can pile a tostada with toppings. So instead of thinking about like how I'm going to like scale this recipe back to accommodate kids, I was more thinking about like, I think really all a kid-friendly recipe is just like a well-written, succinct, and flexible recipe with minimal special equipment and chopping. And what's funny is like, I was talking to my adult friends about that and they were like, frankly, that's what I'm looking for in a recipe too.
Honestly, same. Minimal chopping. That's where you got me. Were you just immersed in kid world since you had kid recipe testers for a while you were creating it?
Yeah, the kids were absolutely amazing. I have to say, I've like worked with adult recipe testers my whole career. The kids were better. The kids were better recipe testers because the thing with kids is that they're not trying to sugarcoat anything. They are very honest. They're very blunt. They have like no sense of like, oh, I want to like start with something nice. Like, they literally were just like straight and to the point. I liked it for these reasons, or like, this was gross. And I took their feedback like very, very seriously. I cut recipes. I changed recipes based on their feedback. But I was just so impressed at how not only capable they were, but how clear and like detailed their feedback was.
They don't hold back at all. They are brutally honest kids. And sometimes we need that in our life.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, we do. Especially when it comes to food too. It's when you're a kid, I know at least I was super, super picky when I was a kid. I mean, you have the usual kids food, mac and cheese, chicken nuggets, American kids food at least. And you kind of roll with that because, I mean, it's easier to feed the kids what they want to eat. But if they actually want to be inclusive in the kitchen too, and maybe get a little more creative, it not only creates that little bonding moment, but it also teaches them how to work their way around the kitchen that they can bring as an adult.
I also think like one of the things I really wanted to show was that not every kid grew up with macaroni and cheese and chicken nuggets. Like, I did not want to center the kid who grew up with mac and cheese and chicken nuggets. For a lot of kids, their kid food was dal. For a lot of kids, their kid food was like rice with soy sauce and butter. You know, I think a lot of kid-friendly books have white authors and white narrators and assume a white audience. And so I wanted to not only give people a book that would expand their palate, no matter who they were and what they grew up with, but that started from a point of, I am not a white kid who grew up with macaroni and cheese and dal, and hopefully the kids who just grew up not seeing themselves in these books will begin to see themselves in these books.
Right. And that's exactly why I said the Americanized version. That was me saying more of like the white culture of it all.
Yeah.
And not saying that there's anything wrong with mac and cheese and chicken nuggets, but like there's so much more out there. And especially if you can not necessarily grill your kid, but like just teach them that there is more things out there. It's a really good thing that you're able to do, I guess, for lack of a better word. But like, there's a lot of benefits to your cookbook as a whole.
I would like to think that like people who are more curious and open about foods just like are more curious, open and empathetic people.
Right. And that's exactly what it is. Kids are really, really curious people. Mm-hmm. And if we lean into that and, you know, do more teaching moments or maybe allow more teaching moments, then they'll be able to kind of be more open to more cultural endeavors, especially in the food world. And you know, that's really awesome. When, for listeners, by the way, her cookbook is named Priya's Kitchen Adventures, a cookbook for kids. And how did this idea come about? Tell me a little bit more about the inspiration behind it.
So I'd written my cookbook Indianish a few years prior. It came out in 2019. And when Indianish came out, I got contacted by a lot of publishers who basically were like, your tone is very playful and childlike. Have you considered writing a children's book? And I knew I didn't want to write a picture book, but I was really into cookbooks when I was a kid. And I thought a lot about the fact that like, I didn't see myself in those cookbooks, and the cookbooks didn't feel like they were for me, or I felt like the recipes were very like simplistic. And I wanted to feel like an adult when I was cooking, even as a kid. And I started talking to my publisher, and we realized that there was like really, that the children's cookbook genre, despite being a really popular genre, there had been very little innovation within it. And by innovation, I really just mean like representation and inclusivity. And I was like, you know, I had this kind of crazy childhood in which I was traveling around the world. Obviously, not every kid will get to travel around the world, but you can do that in your kitchen, with no passport. And so I sort of dreamt up this book that took kids around the world through my eyes and taught them how to cook the recipes that I fell in love with when I was a kid.
When you came back, because you're originally from Dallas, right? So that's where you grew up. Okay, so did you have that understanding as a kid that you were having such unique experiences, or was this just like hopping on a plane was like a normal thing for you, you know?
I don't think I realized how unique it was. And in fact, like, I remember like all the other kids would like drive to Florida with their families. And I just remember thinking like, I wish I could just be normal and like drive to Florida and go to the beach with my family. Like that seems so much more fun. Like, I don't think I was.
No. When you're stuck in a car with five people, I'll never do it again. So, you know, it was good at the time, but I will not relive that.
Well, you know, like as a kid, the grass is always greener. So I'm like seeing these kids, like, you know, going to Florida, sitting on the beach. And I'm like, oh God, I'm like going to these places where I don't speak the language, where everything is different, where people don't look like me. And I don't think I realized how lucky I was. I don't know. I feel like as a kid, you're like never grateful for when you get these like wild, you know, totally unique experiences. But now looking back, I'm like, my God, I was such a little idiot for not realizing how awesome it was that my parents were just like taking me to these places where I could experience cultures that I'd never experienced before. I could experience languages I'd never experienced before and foods I'd never experienced before. Like, I don't know that I would be a food journalist if it weren't for those trips.
And is that how you kind of fell in love with the entire food industry? Was that kind of the budding start for you?
It definitely was a big start because like growing up in Dallas, my parents didn't grow up going to restaurants. I don't think they ever saw the utility of eating out. It was expensive and they were like, we can cook at home. Yes. It just like wasn't something they felt like made sense for our family and our budget. And so really the times where I went out to eat in the most like robust way was when we traveled. And so I feel like that was really my introduction to like dining out and restaurants and just like the magic of restaurants. Because in Dallas, like if we ate out, we often ate at a chain. Olive Garden was our fancy food. That just was it.
My family, we went to like Bertucci's. I know we would... Pretty much just, we weren't necessarily international travelers. I feel like I'm more of a risk taker when it comes to traveling. So like I was the first in my family to go abroad and study there. And, you know, that made my parents want to visit and go to Italy. So we all got to go. And, you know, I feel like once you take that first step and you get exposed to all of it, you're like, oh, I want more. And that's where I'm at still forever, I feel like. You were a prep cook in college, right? Mm-hmm. And then you started working for David Chang's former food magazine, which was named Lucky Peach, as a writer. Then, you know, you were a video host at Bon Appetit. It seems like you were very keen on what you wanted. And then, you know, obviously it's bode well for you. But was this a clear path for you?
Yeah, I knew I wanted to write about food. It's so interesting. Like a lot of people... who come into food journalism, like they were writing about something else or they were writing about news and they sort of fell into food journalism. For me, it was like always food first. It was like, how can I be doing something where I'm touching food in some way? Like my job at Lucky Peach was working in customer service. It wasn't writing. And so like, but I was just like, I know that by joining this food magazine on the staff, like it's one step closer to working in food media. And eventually I did get to write for the website. I feel like college was what cemented for me that I got to run at this food thing because I just feel like I just knew in my gut that it just felt like the right thing to do, even though my friends and my family were like, what are even the career options available if you don't want to work in a restaurant? Like, no one really understood it, but I was just like, I got to run at this. If it doesn't work out, maybe I'll do a more traditional career path. But like, you ever have that feeling where you're just like, I know that if I just get in front of someone, I can dazzle them and impress them. I just need to be given the chance.
Yes.
I just need one person to open a door for me. And so in college, I was just like desperately searching for that door. And I found a few and I just like ran through them.
Oh yeah. I know exactly how you feel. I would say I had a similar experience. I mean, I was doing communications and I was more into PR. I had done a few things in the past and I was like, okay, public relations is going to be my thing. And then one day I walked by a club and it was Spoon University. Mm-hmm. And they were like, oh, do you like food? And I was like, of course. Who doesn't? That's craziness. And then I started, you know, working in that kind of sphere. And then it led to writing. So I always say it kind of found me, but I feel like I really found that path myself just through my passions for, I know, always knew I was kind of good at writing, but like I was, like I said, I was a picky eater. So like,
yeah,
me going into food was kind of crazy for my family. They were like, what are you going to eat ever? So as I got more into the career and then I started traveling more, now I eat like literally everything. But it's crazy how like one situation can change the course of your life. I mean, if I didn't join that club, I would not be sitting here talking to you. I can guarantee it.
Definitely.
College has its pros and cons, but in that respect and letting you find yourself, that really, really, really helped me. And it sounds like it helped you too.
Yeah. By the end of college, I was like writing papers about food for academic classes, just finding any way that I could study food.
I loved, I was reading your New York Times bio and you wrote a thesis about French food. Mm-hmm. And how it, what was the title? Now I'm blanking on it, but I can
The title
was
in French, but it was about how the French used food as a form of soft power.
Mm-hmm. I like that a lot. And the whole fine dining experience and stuff. I've been deep diving into that and all the Michelin star and all of that stuff. I've been really like interested in going deeper into that. In some ways, I feel like fine dining is dying, but then in other ways, I feel like it's not. So I'm really looking at the caveats to both sides. But you're also well known for your series On the Job with New York Times Cooking. Mm-hmm. So meeting and learning the behind the scenes of so many restaurants down to like where they get their laundry done, which I was watching. I thought that was so cool. Is there a story that surprised you or challenged you throughout your time video hosting?
That's a really, really good question. You know, I think what is really remarkable to me is how every single one of the subjects that I featured on the Job, I think pretty much all of them had never been on camera before. And I think I've just like so inspired by like, despite never having been on camera, like their hustle, their charisma, their personality really shines through in every episode. And that seems to be like the common thread. It's sort of this idea that if you work hard and you're true to yourself and you're really good at your job, like it just shows. Yeah. And like each one of the subjects that we have kind of inspires me in a different way. Our instinct oftentimes, like we profiled a middle school cafeteria cook and I feel like my instinct is always to be like, what's next? What do you want to do after this? Like, what does your career trajectory look like? But she and many of the people I feature are just like, I'm really happy doing what I'm doing. I appreciate my job. I appreciate my team. I appreciate my work. And I think oftentimes we are so obsessed with like the next thing, our 5-year plan, our 10-year plan. And it is genuinely very inspiring seeing these people who are just very good at their jobs, happy to be like providing for themselves and their family, just like not trying to like climb some invisible ladder, but just like feeling content with where they are and like being able to like live in that moment of appreciation. I don't know. Yeah. Ruth, the middle school cafeteria cook, she really inspired me in that way. I just think about that line all the time where I was like, what's next? What's next? She was like, what do you mean what's next? I got a great job.
I know. I feel like that is so true. I've been talking about this a lot too, because there's a lot of awesome cookbooks coming up and the guests that I've been talking to, we're just diving into that hustle culture mentality and how we are always looking for the next, the destination. And then when we're at the destination, it's like, what the heck do we do? Mm-hmm. But I've recently been talking to like people with different cultures. So Salvadoran culture, Mexican culture, and how they are so appreciative of what they have that they don't necessarily need that constant change that the American culture tends to gravitate towards. They just need food, good people, and, you know, an understanding of life. And I feel like I would think that we're getting there, especially with the creativeness of in the job culture now and everyone kind of being able to speak their mind and, you know, getting more creative in the content world and the cookbook world, food influencers, etc. But I think it's just such a wonderful way of thinking when we can highlight those not necessarily small businesses, but regular, I don't know how to word this in the right way, regular workers who do really well and work really hard, but don't necessarily get the recognition.
And their jobs are literally vital. Like, we could not function without the guy who rolls our bagels in the morning, the dishwasher who does our dishes, the woman who cooks for our kids in schools. Like, it is every single one. The common thread between each and every one of these jobs is if this person didn't do their job, like, the shit would hit the fan.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And we forget that. Like, it's so easy to just walk into a restaurant and forget every single person, the dishwasher, the busboy, the chef, the whatever, the host. Like, everyone is a part of that culture and a part of getting you the best experience and, you know, putting food on the table, which a lot of people don't necessarily have access to. So it just is so interesting. And I'm trying very hard to be more appreciative, especially talking to everyone. And once you talk to people like that, or just like go up to people, or maybe it's like a coffee shop that you're going into daily, and then you get to know everyone. I just think it's so important to make that human connection.
I totally agree. Because
we're all just trying to get by.
Yes, you know? Exactly. Exactly. We're all just trying to like find happiness in our day to day.
Yeah, no. And if that's like going into your favorite coffee shop, getting a chai latte and talking to the barista, like that's probably a good part of their day too, you know?
Yeah.
So it's very important. If you're listening, try to make connections with people that are around you and try to be a little more appreciative of all the vital workers that we necessarily sometimes skip over and we shouldn't. Has the show made you innately more curious about not only the food industry, but the behind the scenes of life in general? Because I feel like if I was constantly looking at the behind the scenes of stuff, I would want to know everything all the time.
Yes. Like every single episode we do inspires like other ideas or other thoughts on like what else are we not seeing? What else feels invisible to the everyday person walking down the street, but that feels really vital? We're doing an episode this season about the person who picks up your compost and drops it off at the like compost area in New York. And that guy, his shift runs from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. He's driving for 12 hours straight.
Oh my gosh. Good for him.
Yeah. And so it's just like a lot of this work happens early in the morning. It happens late at night. It happens while we're asleep, before we wake up. One of the things that is like, that often happens with these episodes is like, I'm up at 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, because like, that's when a lot of the really vital essential workers in this city are up. Like they're up so that like we can do our 9 to 5.
Right. I know. You don't even think about stuff like that at all. It just like decompose disappears.
Yeah. And you don't see it. Yeah.
No, you don't think about anything. Like where does your garbage go when you're putting it in the trash? You just never think about it again. It's like there's so many people behind the lines that are figuring that out for you, and they're such honorable jobs too. I hate the entire thing that like they're dishonorable jobs, or like they're like not necessarily worth it, or like they're blue collar workers. Like I hate that mindset, because I mean, would you go do compost? This guy is like doing really, really hard work at really crazy hours of the night.
With an amazing attitude and loves his job.
Yeah. That's another great point, is that he loves his job. I'm excited to see that. When is that going to come out?
Probably this fall. We're filming the next season. Okay. We film our first episode this Friday, and then we'll be filming the rest of the season and just releasing it at various points. I'm really excited about this season. We have a bunch of really good episodes.
How many seasons have there been so far?
There have been 3 seasons. This is our fourth. We just released our first episode of the fourth season, which was a restaurant dishwasher. And then, yeah, I'm excited for what else we got in the pipeline for this year.
Do you get like really gratuitous responses from viewers whenever they watch?
Like what kinds of responses?
Just like people being grateful for you showing and, you know, maybe relate to it.
Definitely. I think we also get a lot of responses with people being like, what is this person paid? You know, they're working too hard. Like people who want better for those workers, which I really appreciate. And so, you know, I think one thing that has been a big learning for us is like, we need to talk about in our episodes, like how much they're getting paid, whether they feel valued, do they have health insurance, do they have benefits? Because like the more that we can showcase that reality, hopefully the more customers will like demand more. And hopefully like that can lead to meaningful change where like, you know, the dishwasher is paid a livable wage and gets a 401k and paid time off, just like the rest of the employees do. Like my hope is that our work creates not only appreciation for these jobs, but like translates to just like better conditions for these workers.
Just like basic human conditions, you know, what's that? Yeah, I am a bit curious too. So there's been a lot of social media going around, especially with tipping culture and especially minimum wages. Like there's, you know, all those laws that are going into place. I'm just at a point where I feel like I am always willing to tip, especially, you know, great people deserve the tip. I just feel like they should have a living wage at this point. And it's crazy to me that we're not there.
Yeah, I just reported a big story about exactly this issue. And, you know, what it comes down to is owners don't want to, like everyone wants better pay for workers, but owners don't want to pay for it. Customers experience sticker shock at restaurants that raise prices so they can pay their workers better. And you just desperately wish that like someone would take on the onus of like paying so that workers can earn at the very least a living wage.
Right. And I literally went to a restaurant, this was about a year ago now when I really started paying more attention to it. They had written on the receipt, we don't pay our workers enough in wage, so you have to tip like double basically.
That's a weird way of phrasing it.
I literally was so shocked. I was with my sister and we were like, I don't know how to go about this right now, especially being in food media. Like the way it was not only phrased, but the fact that the workers, I could see them because it was an open kitchen and like they were working so hard. And I was like, so what are you giving them, like $10 and then you're expecting all the customers to double their tip? It just is so crazy to me. Like, just like corporate America, maybe the owners should take a cut if they're able.
Yeah.
You know, give it to them. It just, the system needs a bit of alteration. And I think though you giving the behind the scenes of it all really, really opens people's eyes to the issues that are going on.
I really, really hope so. Thanks for saying that.
Yeah, you're welcome. I mean, and all of your New York Times article, because like, who doesn't read those, honestly? So you did mention your other cookbook named Indianish. What about this book gave a lot of insight into your cultural background? What would you like people who maybe haven't used the book yet to know about it?
Indianish or
Yeah, we'll do Indianish because that's, is that your first one? Or is your Cooking at Home your first one?
No. My first one was actually a book about dining hall food that released in 2014. Prius Kitchen Avengers is my fourth cookbook. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. I didn't do my data enough.
No one knows about my first book because I sold it when I was in college. It was sort of like this fluke. But like, I guess Indianish was sort of like, in a lot of ways, it was sort of my first like real big girl cookbook. But it really was a celebration of the food that I grew up eating. I grew up in a very firmly Indian household, but in Dallas, Texas, my mom learned to cook only when she came to America. So she had these memories of Indian flavors and was recreating them with what she could find in the US. And I just felt like mm-hmm. her food was every day. It was delicious. It was nourishing. It was wholesome. It was bright. It was complex, but it wasn't fussy. And oftentimes her stuff came together in 20 minutes because she was a working mom and that's the time that she had. And it just felt like Fair. Her repertoire could be a really amazing way in to Indian flavors for people. So it's like whether you've never cooked Indian food before or whether you grew up with Indian food, but you never learned how to make your parents' recipes, that's what I wanted Indianish to be.
That's incredible. Also, side note, the dining hall cookbook, was this highlighting dining hall food? Because dining hall food is not the best.
Yeah, it was about when I was in college, my first food writing job actually was I would take the food in the dining hall and teach kids how to hack your dining hall and make like better That's food amazing. From dining hall ingredients.
Oh my gosh, I needed that so bad because I literally ate pasta every single day. I was like, I'm not taking anything else. But anyway, so you seem to have a very, very close relationship with your mom because she's been mentioned in Indianish, I saw as well, and now your Priya's Kitchen Adventures. What does she think about everything? Do you work with her in these things? What's the process like?
Yeah, she was my co-author on Indianish. So they're mm-hmm. all her recipes. She was a huge part of that. And she developed a lot of the recipes for Priya's Kitchen Adventures too. She's an amazing recipe developer. I think she's like an absolutely brilliant cook. I think that she went into the job that she did because it was programming was what she knew. But I think if she had more flexibility, if she wasn't a recent immigrant, I totally could have seen her doing my job and just like writing cookbooks for a living. Cause she's such a gifted Aww. Recipe developer. She does things that are so innate that when she, and like every week we talk about what we cook and every week she blows my mind with something she's just like invented or done that I'm like, I never would have thought of that. You are truly like the most innovative cook that I know. And so my mom and I are so Wow. different. We are like not Lorelai and Rory Gilmore. We are not best friends, but like food is our shared love language. That's like where we can connect despite all of our differences. That's like, I feel like that's when we are the happiest is when we're just like talking about what we cooked that night.
Oh, and that's such what the beauty of food is like everyone needs to eat. And it's such a big commonality between so many families. So when you are able to share that, especially it sounds like she's really creative in that way. It's a really beautiful thing that you're able to do that and include her on your projects too, because now I feel like there's so much opportunity, especially with social media and like all of the publishers out there now, that she gets to kind of do that as her second career almost is a really, really cool thing.
Yeah, it is really cool. I keep telling her that she should write recipes for New York Times Cooking. She's so smart.
Yes. Yeah. Tell her. She has to. She has my endorsement. I'll definitely be using them. I need new recipes. So a little bit more about your cookbook. What are your biggest tips out there for families trying to get their kids more involved in the chicken? Oh my gosh, sorry. Kitchen. I'm so tired today. If you couldn't tell, I'm like stumbling.
Give them tasks. Like wash okay. the beans, wash the vegetables, pick the cilantro off the stems. Like take them to the grocery store. My parents used to do this. I loved this. They would take me to the grocery store and they'd be like, you get to pick one bonus item. You can pick anything in the store that's like $10 or under and that's like your thing. And so like sometimes I would pick like a package of Arborio rice. Sometimes it would be like Pop-Tarts, but like it was always something different. And I loved just like wandering the aisles and exploring what was available. And that was really fun because then I would come home and I'd be like, when are you going to cook with the rice that I got? Or, you know, when are you going to make these noodles that we picked up? So I think just like the more you can involve them in small but empowering ways, the easier it's going to be.
For sure. And I saw your video of the kids making chocolate mousse. Mm-hmm. And it was so, so cute because yeah. I was like, this is such a simple recipe with a little more complexity that they can get excited about.
Yeah. And teaches them a technique.
Right. Right. Exactly. And teaches them a skill that they'll hold because, yeah. I mean, I learned to cook and like my dad was a cook as well. But like for families who don't necessarily have that, but like are interested in the kitchen. It's such a good skill to have when you move out on your own or just something that you need. Honestly, it's just a life skill that everyone needs, yeah. But you don't have to cook anything crazy. You don't have to chop like crazy, yeah. But you can do simple recipes that are fun, but still taste good. Yeah. One of your popular recipes you actually cooked on Selena and Chef, which was dahi toast. Yeah. Can you tell listeners what this kind of consists of? And then is this a family recipe or something you curated with your mom in adulthood?
It is a family recipe, something I grew up eating. It was like my weekend breakfast staple. You basically take sourdough bread and then you make a mixture of cilantro and onions and like really thick yogurt. You spread it into the bread. You make sandwiches. Mm-hmm. You toast it on both sides. And then you temper mustard seeds and curry leaves in olive oil, pour it over the top to make the top really like oily and crunchy and crackly. And then you eat it with a swirl of ketchup and chutney. And it's sort of like, I think of it almost like a grilled cheese with Indian vibes.
Oh, okay. No, but that sounds delicious. How is it cooking with Selena? It was over Zoom, so I know it was could have been the potential to be a little tougher than being in person, but I want to know your thoughts.
It was great. She's the best. She's like truly so fun. We are about the same age and we both grew up in Dallas. And so we just had a lot to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, it was so easy. Like it was just like catching up with a friend, which you don't expect when you're like doing something with a really famous person, but she was just so chill and fun and easy to riff with.
Oh yeah. No, she's incredibly personable. I've had, I feel like I'm collecting like all the people that have been on her show on my podcast. I'm like, this means that I'll be on her show at some point. Cause I have so many guests that have said so many similar things though and saying how awesome she is and how much they just love to mentor her. Did you enjoy being in that mentorship position?
I don't know if any of us are mentoring her per se, but I think she's just like a really open and curious person. And I feel like she chose chefs very intentionally because she wanted to learn different kinds of skills that touch different cultures. And she's so open and excited about each of them. Like she was just a joy to talk to about cooking, and the mistakes I think make it even better.
Yeah, the mistakes are what make the show, honestly. Mm-hmm. They should start filming like me in my kitchen. I literally just like burned myself 2 hours ago.
It's like a show about the bloopers, and I love that because like cooking isn't perfect. Like Lord knows that like I'm not I don't have like some picture perfect kitchen, and it was really nice to get to embrace that side of cooking.
You should go back in person at some point. I was telling Tanya Holland was on a while back, and she also did Zoom. And I was like, I pitched. I was like, you should do an all-star season where all the Zoom people come back in person and do it. So
that'd be great.
That's my pitch again. Food Network, or not Food Network now. What's she on? HBO, whatever streaming platform listens. That's my pitch. I'm sure you've come across a lot of food icons just doing your job. And who is someone that you really look up to? Is there anyone that you look at for recipes or just inspiration?
I mean, the person who blazed the trail for me was Mother Joffrey. She is an incredibly amazing Indian actress and cookbook author who I've had the pleasure of like hanging out with on a number of occasions. And not only did she like pioneer Indian cooking and Indian cookbooks in America, but she has really made it a point to befriend the generations that have come after her and cheerlead. And I sometimes feel like she's like one of my biggest advocates in the industry. She is someone who entered a world in which Indian cooking was seen as the other, and she did so much work to get everyone to be cooking dal and paneer in their homes. And I feel like I sort of picked up the baton and hopefully ran a little bit, like took that conversation a little bit further, but I stand on her shoulders and I just appreciate that I just feel like she could not have been more supportive of me and other Indian American chefs and authors who are trying to do what she did in a more contemporary context. I just, like, all hail Mother Joffrey. She's amazing. She's also an amazing actress. She's, like, stunning. She mm-hmm. filmed, like, a rap video. She has endless talent.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how I strive to be. Rap video, mm-hmm. like, everything you can think of, out of the box. But that's a really, really unique thing to look up to someone in that way and then be able to actually converse with them on the same level is really, really a unique and cool thing. So I'm sure you were, like, elated to be able to be in the same room with her and hang out with her a yeah. few times. I would love to get into what's next for you. Do you have any other upcoming projects or anything else you'd like to share that's going on?
Season 4 of On the Job is really exciting. I'm very, 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 very excited about that. I'm very excited about this cookbook. I'm working on a book of essays that I can't say much about, but it is my first venture into non-cookbooks, and I'm really excited about it. And, you know, I'm working on a couple of other creative projects, but I think I've realized that storytelling is what I love doing the most. And mm-hmm. I think you can expect to see a lot more storytelling from me in all different forms.
Oh, yay. My writer brain is very excited for that. All right. So I have a short game for you.
Okay.
If you're up for it.
Let's do it.
So it's like a little lightning round. I'm going to pin foods or food trends against each other, and you're going to tell me if you're for or against it.
Okay.
All right, cool. So I kind of took some of these from your cookbook as a little inspo. So first one, sweet versus savory crepe.
Sweet.
Same. Second, pesto versus marinara sauce.
Pesto.
Agree. Third one, hummus versus spinach dip.
Hummus.
Four, chocolate mousse or chocolate souffle.
Chocolate mousse.
Ooh, I'm such a, actually, I'll eat anything chocolate. Who am I kidding? Fifth one, grilled cheese versus buttered noodles. Super basic.
Grilled cheese.
Yeah. Okay. Specifically your grilled cheese, which I definitely need to try. All right. So there is one question that I ask every single guest on here to kind of finish out the show. If there is one cooking appliance or utensil that you think everyone should splurge on, what would it be and why?
One really good chef's knife. That's really all you need is one really good chef's knife. You can spend like $2 on a paring knife, but as long as you have one great mm-hmm. chef's knife, you're good.
That's the commonality I'm seeing. Everyone's like, it yeah. changes your life, and it really does. It has changed mine. Even if you don't like to chop a lot of vegetables, which seems to be the theme of the show that I keep bringing up, it does really, really help. Even with just like fruits and stuff, having a good knife is a game changer. Well, thank you so, so much for taking a time out. And even though you're sick and you got to talk, you sounded great.
Oh, God, I'm so glad. In my morning meeting, my editor was like, you sound horrible. And I was like, oh no.
It's all right. I was stumbling a little bit today too. I'm like all over the place. I have a lot of stuff going on, as we all do. So,
well, thank you so much for having me. It was great to meet and talk.
I know. Thank you. So you can keep up with Priya's latest project on Instagram at Priya Krishna, or order her newest cookbook, Priya's Kitchen Adventures, a cookbook for kids, on Amazon now. Hey, fellow foodies. Thanks so much for listening. And don't forget to leave me a review. While you're at it, make sure to follow me at livinforfoodpod on Instagram or TikTok, or email me at livinforfoodpod@gmail.com. Let me know what you're cooking up this week, which guests you would like to see on the podcast, or tell me your opinions on the latest viral food trend. And in case you're just joining me, there is an entirety of season 1 ready and waiting for you. Until next time.